This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Remember back in the early months of the pandemic, you might have heard that line that Shakespeare wrote King Lear while quarantined during the plague. For many, hearing this fact further emphasized the pressure to be productive while spending time at home. That is, if you had the luxury to work from home. Yet, as many have felt pressure to grow personally or tackle passion projects during the pandemic, like baking the perfect sourdough or finally learning a new language, others are pushing back against these ideas. Last month, shortly after Illinois moved into Phase 5 of its reopening after coronavirus, I was joined by Joy Lanzendorfer. She's a journalist and author with an opinion piece in USA Today called COVID Cut into Hustle Culture. Is it time to finally turn against workaholism? Also joining us was Beatrice Foreman. Her recent article for The Goods on Vox is called The Soothing, Slightly Sinister World of Productivity Hacks. And Dr. Cynthia Lubin-Langtu, a professor in the Department of Clinical Psychology at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology and one of our favorites on the show. Here now is our conversation about the pressure to be productive during the pandemic. I started by asking Joy to explain the American concept of hustle culture and how that changed over the last year.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, this isn't about just hard work. It's taking hard work for your job to another level. It's this idea of rise and grind 24/7. When you're awake, you're essentially working. And it's basically the glamorization of workaholism. This notion that if you hustle hard enough and you strive for your work, you know, maybe you can be a mogul. You can be like Oprah or Bill Gates or something like that. And it, you know, it's a poisonous notion. It's somewhat unhealthy and deceptive, and it's definitely something that has taken more of a root the last couple of years in our culture.
I like that this idea in some ways ties back to like as far back as the gold rush in American culture in the 1800s. I wonder, Joy, when the pandemic hit, most businesses are closed. Did you feel that pressure to, you know, grow or grind in your work?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I'm a author and a journalist, and I'm a freelance writer, and so that's been something that I've struggled with a lot in my career. Is just this idea that, you know, how much work is too much work, and when is ambition turning sort of unhealthy, you know? And it does. You're right, absolutely right. It does go back to the gold rush. This idea that, you know, if you work really, really hard for a short period of time, all your dreams can come true, and you can become fabulously wealthy. And it's somewhat of a problem, because it's hard to know, especially when you're working at home and working for yourself, when exactly to stop and how to find that work-life balance. And so, yeah, that's definitely something that I've had to reckon with myself in my own life.
Beatrice, how about you? Did the stay-at-home orders affect your sort of perception of the need to be productive this past year?
Definitely. So I'm actually a college student. I go to the University of Pennsylvania, as well as being an aspiring and technically full-time journalist. So I think over the past year, as my kind of social life dwindled down, I felt this pressure to work more because I had the time to. And as gratifying as all of it was, and to see those professional strides, definitely did take a toll on my personal life. And I found that just a lot of how I defined myself and the characteristics of myself that I liked were really work-related. And I can definitely see that happening during the pandemic, as kind of the line between work and relaxation and play becomes so amorphous because you're working from home and those aspects of your life just bleeding into each other kind of like seamlessly.
All right, we have to pause to take a break for our member stations. When we come back, we're going to bring Dr. Langtu into the conversation. If you're just tuning in, this is The 21st. We're talking about hustle culture and that sort of pressure to be productive and grow yourself during the pandemic that a lot of us might have felt if we were lucky enough to not be essential workers and be able to work from home or stay home otherwise during the pandemic. We're speaking with Dr. Cynthia Lubin-Langtu, professor in the Department of Clinical Psychology at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. Also, Beatrice Foreman, who wrote an article for The Goods on Vox called The Soothing, Slightly Sinister World of Productivity Hacks. And Joy Lanzendorfer, a journalist and author who recently had a guest essay in USA Today called COVID Cut into Hustle Culture, Is It Time to Finally Turn Against Workaholism? We're going to continue this conversation on the 21st after a short break. I'm Brian Mackey. Stay with us. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. On today's show, we're revisiting a conversation about productivity, that need to always be doing something, whether it's for work or chores around the house. The pandemic changed our relationship to getting things done. Last month on the show, I talked about this with Joy Lanzendorfer. She's a journalist and author with a recent guest essay in USA Today called COVID Cut into Hustle Culture. Is it time to finally turn against workaholism? Also joining the conversation were Beatrice Foreman. Her recent article for The Goods on Vox is called The Soothing, Slightly Sinister World of Productivity Hacks. And Dr. Cynthia Lubin-Langtu, a professor in the Department of Clinical Psychology at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. One note, you will hear some callers during this segment. They called in when it was live, obviously because this is a recorded segment today. We are not taking calls. However, we always love to hear what you thought about what we talked about here on the 21st. Get in touch with us. You can do so on our website, which is 21stshow.org. There you can leave us a voicemail or join our texting group, or you can just send us an email. The address for that is talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. Okay, here now is the rest of my conversation with Joy Lanzendorfer, Beatrice Foreman, and Dr. Cynthia Lubin-Langtu on productivity culture and how the pandemic affected our relationship to it and what that could be doing to our health. Dr. Langtu, before the break, I wanted to ask you, did you, your colleagues, your clients, have you heard about this sort of pandemic-related pressure to grow, to better oneself, and how did people respond to that?
Thank you so much for that question. And I really appreciate contextualizing it with culture. So yes, I experienced that pressure for sure. I experienced that sense of, I have so much time before me. I should being the operative word here, get more done. My students at the Chicago School experienced it. My own children were experiencing it. And I think what we're seeing a year and more in, is the pushback against that should. What is that should grounded in? Who says that I should be doing more towards work with my time rather than play? And I really look forward to the continued conversation around pushing back against that should. But yes, I experienced it. My children experienced it. My students at the Chicago School experienced it. And my private practice clients experienced it as well.
All right, we have a caller on the line. I'm going to go now to Adam is calling from Crystal Lake. Adam, thanks for calling in.
So I am a rock climbing gym owner here in Crystal Lake, Illinois. And I bought the gym in 2019. And I knew when I bought the gym that I was going to have to work hard for my thought was about a year to really get things up moving and stable. And obviously as we went into the pandemic, that is not what happened at all. I had recently put in a really large investment in some renovations that were going to get started right around the time the pandemic happened. So I tied up a lot of the funds my business had into those renovations. And I had no money to bring anyone in to help me with those. So I ended up working about 60 hours a week throughout the entire shutdown. So while everyone else was kind of getting a break, I was still working hard. And then when we were able to reopen, I had no money to pay any of my employees. So I had to be the sole employee of my gym for about 2 months, which definitely wore on me. It was more than I bargained for sure.
And how, where are you today? Are you feeling more balance in your life, or is it still rise and grind, as we were saying earlier?
You know what? I would really like to say that I am more balanced now. And I think that for the most part I am. I found that new normal, you know, people keep talking about. But it's definitely still a higher level than I think I can sustain for much longer.
Okay. Dr. Langto, I wonder if you want to weigh in on anything we just heard there from Adam. And Adam, thank you so much for calling in, and good luck with the gym.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah. Best wishes to the gym, and it sounds like quite the endeavor. You know, so many of the things that you pointed out speak to some of what I wanted to talk about today. Adam, when you set up this idea, and I think that it's important when we're thinking about work-life boundaries and balance, that we do a couple of things, that we spend time in the direction of our values, that we manage our expectations, that we set clear boundaries, and we take all aspects of our health into account, physical, emotional, and spiritual, and that we find time to play. What it sounds like is happening for you, Adam, is that you had this idea of how you wanted to spend your time and energies in the direction of your values, but that there were circumstances in the last year and a half that made it a lot different than you thought that it would look. I think what I appreciate that I hear in what you're saying is that it's clear to you that this is not sustainable, that it's not your intention to work 60 hours a week in the long term, that you recognize in the short term, right, given the circumstances, I have to do this amount of work in this period of time. And I guess what I would say is, moving forward, to continue to reevaluate the sustainability and the balance of what is happening for you. And I think that that will bring forth success for you, but as well as the other folks listening in on this call. I think that what's difficult about the hustle culture or the rise and grind culture is when there is not a boundary around it, when we think that we can sustain this over the long term and not 2 or 6 months while we're getting a business up off the ground. And that's a really important piece to remember. In the short term, if you have a goal that's in direction of your values, then it's okay to work a little bit more, but that's not sustainable over the long term.
All right. And I'm going to just take a moment to remind listeners, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about how the pandemic has affected our perception of being productive. We're talking with Dr. Cynthia Lubin-Langto, who's a professor at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology, clinical psychologist. Also, Beatrice Foreman, reporter with The Goods for Vox, and Joy Lanzendorfer, who's a journalist and author, recent opinion piece looking at hustle culture in USA Today. 800-222-9455 is our number, 800-222-9455. Beatrice, can you talk, since your story looked at TikTok, the video social media platform, and sort of the idea of influencers, what role do influencers, these people, play into hustle culture, right, with their constant pushing of content and creative life, et cetera, et cetera?
I guess the way I always looked at it, and it's just the lens I examine it in the piece I wrote, is that for young people like Gen Z, and I guess now Gen Alpha, who are like the new people being born, influencers are like the modern day gold rushers, the modern day San Francisco 49ers. These are people who put a lot of work very quickly to like amass intense amounts of fame. And I think influencers do this thing where like they kind of glorify the work they do, even if maybe it's not traditional work. They're monetizing all aspects of their lives, what they eat, who they hang out with, their workouts, the walks they go on. And I think for young people, that kind of creates this pressure where we think maybe everything we should be doing should be productive. Maybe everything we're doing should make us a little bit of money. Maybe I should turn my passions and my hobbies into a side hustle. And while that entrepreneurial spirit may also kind of be tied to a certain insecurity around the job market and to the economy, I think it's coming out of this need that maybe we don't feel like we're doing enough because we're constantly seeing other people do more on social media.
As a journalist, I hear a little bit of that. I mean, I feel like I'm sort of always on call looking for story ideas or conversation ideas for the show here. But it sounds like what Beatrice is describing there is taking that to like a much greater horrifying level. Joy, can you talk about, you know, we were talking about passion projects, but I mean, the pandemic has also sort of shed a light on the dark side of the hustle culture. Maybe you can talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the world, it's really bad for your health. So the World Health Organization has recently said that working 55 hours a week constitutes a serious health hazard. So there's a risk of stroke and heart disease, and they credit 745,000 deaths worldwide to working overtime. So it does have this serious side to it, where if you make this your lifestyle, it can actually really hurt you physically. And it also, you know, takes a toll on your relationships and the other parts of your life, which makes sense. If you start applying, you know, all of your life to your work, you don't have time for anything else, including your health and including your family. And so, you know, it can lead you into this a very like dark and unhealthy spiral eventually.
Dr. Langtu, a lot of people tie their self-worth to how productive they are. Can you talk about shifting that perspective, maybe finding other ways of looking at self-worth?
Absolutely. I think both what Joy and Beatrice have brought up and did earlier in thinking about our larger culture has so much to do with this and our identities. I liken this to what I call internalized capitalism, which suggests that individuals grow to equate their productivity with their self-worth. So how much I'm making and how much I'm producing is directly related to self-worth. And it's just not true. How do we know that we might be suffering from internalized capitalism? Here are some of the signs. We believe that hard work brings happiness. We feel guilty when we're resting or playing. We use the word lazy to describe downtime, right? We prioritize work over our health, that's sleeping, eating, or working out. And we prioritize work over relationships. All of those signs that we've internalized capitalism and we're putting our self-worth directly related to our productivity. What's the solution, you ask? The solution is to clarify and center your values. Decide the things that are important to you and make sure that your time reflects that your energies are going in the direction of your values. Remind yourself that your work is not you. Your work is separate from you. Your work is something that you do. You are who you are, and you are enough.
Yeah, I recently heard someone saying, don't base your self-worth on, you know, somewhere from which you can be fired at a moment's notice.
That's great advice. Absolutely. Yeah. And I would extend that. Don't base your self-worth on anything that's not about who you are and your values. Absolutely, Brian.
Yeah. Okay. Dr. Langtu, I guess, do you have any additional in the final minute or so we have in our conversation? And I should say, we were tied at a conversation among the producers, as we do every morning, putting our show together. And one of my colleagues referred me to, I believe it's an outfit calling themselves the Nap Authority, which is sort of an art group that stages these, you know, they put a bed in a public place as an art installation, and they call it Rest is Resistance. The Nap Ministry, thank you. Someone corrected me. Dr. Langtu, what are some other ways, other outside of, you know, taking up art installations of public napping, what are some other ways people can instill work-life boundaries?
Right. I love the idea of, you know, taking time to rest. And rest is resistance, right? Besides spending time in the direction of your values, manage your expectations and those with whom you work. Clarify boundaries. Learn to say no and have that be a full sentence. Make sure that you're taking all aspects of your health, physical, emotional, and spiritual, into account and prioritizing all of those. And play, 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 play. Get lots of rest, but when you get up from that rest, you know, dance, laugh, make music, create. Do things that bring joy to your spirit. I would also say another large piece, so that's what individuals can do. I think that as we go back, one of the best things that we can do is organizations can play a large part in cultivating a culture that centers well-being and our humanity while also supporting work and organizational goals. And I think individually and collectively, if we do those things, we'll be a much better, happier, and successful group of folks.
Well, this conversation has brought joy to my spirit. So I want to thank Dr. Cynthia Lubin-Langtu of the Chicago School of Professional Psychology, Beatrice Foreman with The Goods from Vox, and Joy Lanzendorfer, who's a journalist and author, recent opinion piece in USA Today. Joy, Beatrice, Dr. Langtu, thank you so much for being with us. Good conversation today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And that is it for today's show. You can stay up to date with us on Twitter. To follow us, just search for 21ST Show. That's at 21st Show. We tweet out links with analysis and background on what we've been talking about. On our Facebook page, you can just search for The 21st to like us. You can also comment on what we're working on or post questions or comments you want us to ask on air. All those links, every other way to connect with us, joining our texting group. If you want to leave us a voicemail, send an email, or follow us on social media, it's all at our website, 21stshow.org. We've also got all of our past shows there. You can find us most places you get your podcasts as well. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, NPR One. Just search for The 21st. That's The 21ST. The 21st is produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Our interns are Zainab Qureshi and Brielle Skullark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thank you to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.